Welcome to session OUC 3-8, Planning and Deployment for Edge Server with Link. My name is Thomas Binder, and we will be talking about Edge Server planning and architecture consideration in the next 1.25 hours. The objective really here is that everyone should understand the Edge Server architecture. So what do I need if I want to provide all these features that Edge Server give me in my environment? What do I need to consider? How can I do a good, supported, functional architecture for my Edge Server? I will highlight in this session a number of common misunderstandings where I've seen in a lot of conversations with customers, partners, peers within Microsoft that they are just, well, misunderstandings on how firewalls, for example, certificates should be configured. So we will highlight these. And we will talk about a few best practices, what you should do for your Edge Server deployment. Overall, you will understand after the session, hopefully, the requirements for the Edge Server, and you will be able to deploy the best possible design for your environment. We will start at the beginning. Why do you want to have an Edge Server? What's the benefit of an Edge Server? Are there any alternatives? What does it mean to have one? We'll talk very briefly about the Edge components. Then we will take a look how clients sign in into the Edge Server. This has changed from Link 2010 to Link 2013, and we will see here in a few flows how this change will affect your environment. We will talk about different signaling versus media paths, and then all the other things that you need to consider. Reverse proxy, your DNS and the certificates, networking, load balancing, high availability and disaster recovery, and also sizing and placement, and finally, how you can validate a deployment. Before we go into all these details, I want to introduce myself. My name is Thomas Binder. I'm working for Microsoft still since 2007, started in local Microsoft consulting services in Austria, worked from the beginning with OCS 2007, then OCS 2007 R2, Link 2010. Then I moved into a global team, into the so-called Voice Center of Excellence, still part of MCS, but we are global and we help customers, partners, MCS to be successful in Link deployments, especially when it comes to voice. Personally, I have done a lot of work with Edge Server. So in the Microsoft Certified Master program, I am Microsoft Certified Master and also Microsoft Certified Solution Master. I used to teach about the Edge Server. So how does the flow works? What does the Edge Server do? How do you need to configure it? And so on. Personally, I live in Austria, in Vienna, and my private passion is playing field hockey. If you have any questions after the session about that, we can talk about it. If you have any work-related questions, tbinder@microsoft.com. That's my SIP address. That's my email address. Feel free to ping me if you have any follow-up questions. So now let's get into the content. Why do you want to deploy an Edge Server? If we think about Edge Server, you should first think about the different users that connect to your environment with the Edge Server. And you can see here a table on the very left side. I have the different scenarios. So there's the presence, instant message, in a one-to-one relationship, instant messaging conferencing, where you do instant message with more than one user, other user at the same time, the collaboration, whiteboarding, PowerPoint sharing, polls, this kind of stuff. Then we have audio calls, one-to-one, can be to the PSTN or could be to another Link user. We have video calling, one-to-one. We have audio-video conferencing, so the same thing, but now we have more than two users. And then we have file transfer and file upload. The remote user is a user who has an Active Directory account in your environment, enabled for Link, but is connected over the external network. So this user will connect over the Edge Server, and this user will get the full feature set. Everything will just work for the user like the user would be connected internally. So I wouldn't even know if my PC is now connected to the internal network or the external, because everything looks the same, everything just works. So that's fantastic for remote users. The second group of users are the federated users. A federation in Link is the concept. My company, contoso.com, has a federation established to litverinc.com, and that means that the Link servers are configured to trust each other. So I configure my environments to say, well, you accept traffic from litverinc.com. Litverinc configures their environment to accept traffic from contoso.com. And now I can talk to all these federated users from Litverinc. And again, I will have the full feature set. Presence will work, instant message, conferencing. The link client will tell me this is a federated user. I will have this small planet icon indicating that this is an external user, but I can still collaborate with these users as it would be an internal one. The next group are anonymous users. Anonymous users are all users who don't have an Active Directory account in my environment or in any of my federated environments. I can still work with them on Link. I can invite them to meetings, and they can join these meetings as anonymous users. In these meetings, so a meeting is always a conference, so we consider it not as one-to-one, because there are always more people. Obviously, you can have a meeting with just two users, but from a technical perspective, it's always a conference. So we don't do these conferences one-to-one, but we can do IM conferencing, we can do all the collaboration things, PowerPoint sharing, and so on. We can do all the AV conferencing, so audio, video. We can do desktop sharing and file transfer upload from the meeting works as well. Anonymous users, they will, if they don't have Link deployed in their environment, they will join with the Link web app. It's a website that gives you rich functionality. It gives you audio, it gives you video. All you need to do is to install a small add-in. If the other company has also Link deployed, but we don't have a federation established, they can just join with their Link client, and they will join as anonymous users. Then there's the final group, PIC, Public Instant Message Connectivity. I can connect my environment to PIC providers like Yahoo, like Skype, AOL, and I will also get some functionality. So with all these vendors, I can do presence, and I can do one-to-one instant messages. With Skype, I can do also audio calls. Soon, we will have video with Skype as well. I don't have a date for you, but it is on the 18-month roadmap that was published in February. So right now, we should be expecting this within the next 14 months. But it's a roadmap, so we are working on it, and we don't have a specific date. We also have the capability to do federation with XMPP. We don't need this XMPP gateway anymore that we had in OCS 2007 R2 and in Link 2010. It was a dedicated server. You needed to deploy that in your parameter network. Now, the Link server can do that natively. You just need to enable it. The Edge server gives you even more scenarios. So we talked now about these user scenarios. But maybe you're saying, well, I don't have all these scenarios. There is more to it. The mobility client will use the Edge server, especially the AV Edge server. For all the signaling, our mobility client is using actually SIP over HTTPS. So we send all the traffic to the reverse proxy. And the Edge server is not included in this kind of traffic. However, in my Link 2013 mobility clients, I can also do audio and video. I can do voice over IP. As soon as I do this, it will be sent to my audio video Edge server, and I need to have an Edge server deployment in order to be able to do that. Again, for mobility clients, push notifications. If I have mobility clients for Windows Phone, there is a push notification service. It's a cloud service that is used so that these notifications get pushed down to my phone. And that's not Link specific. That's always when you get any push notifications from any application on your phone, it will come from a push notification service. So now, in order for your environment to tell the push notification service that it needs to push down a notification to my client, we need to establish, basically it's a federation between your environment and the push notification service so that you can get all your push notifications. So even if you're only deploying Link internally and you want to enable your Link clients to use it internally to sign in on the wireless network in your corporation, if you want to have push notifications on the Windows phone, then you need to have this kind of federation. For iPhone, iOS, and for Android, we don't rely on a push notification service. They have a different path where the servers can directly send notifications to the applications. Link web app, we talked about that. The application in the web browser that you can use to join meetings. It's also mostly based on HTTPS. So if you join a meeting in the Link web app, you just download the website over the reverse proxy. However, as soon as you add any media, audio, video, desktop sharing, this will go over the AV Edge server. So again, you need an Edge server there. Then we have a number of these hybrid cloud integration options. For example, your company could decide, I want to host my users, my Exchange users, in the cloud. So I'm using either partner hosted or Office 365 unified messaging. If you want to do that, then Edge server will be the component talking to this environment. Same for Office 365 hybrid configuration, where you have some of your users on Link enabled in Office 365. You use the same domain. The other user looks as internal to you as any other user. However, to make this work, the communication goes over the Edge servers, so you need to have Edge servers. So what comes up a lot in conversations with customers is that they are saying, well, our remote users, they are always using VPN anyway. So we have a VPN solution in place. Can we just do that instead of deploying the Edge server? And the answer is, well, yes, you can, but. And there are really two big points. One is, obviously, all these additional features like federation, anonymous, you will completely lose them because without an Edge server, you can't do that. Mobility clients, well, the question really is, are you able to get your mobile phones into your VPN? Additionally, there might be some situations where, for example, an IP phone. I could use my Link phone. I take it from work, take it home, plug it in into the network. It connects over the Edge server to my Link environment, and now I have an IP phone at home, which is a really great experience. If I have a VPN only, well, it will be difficult to connect this IP phone to the VPN. The other thing is, if the customer now says, well, I don't need all this functionality, that's really okay. Well, I would challenge that, but if they are saying that, then the question really is your VPN ready to run real-time communication? VPNs are usually used so that external users, well, they can access their emails, they can access their documents, they can download something, can upload something, but real-time communication, it's really important that it's very fast. I don't care if my email arrives a few seconds late. But if you're on an audio call, in a video conference, and there is a delay of half a second, that's already pretty bad. And you have to realize that VPN will always add an additional layer of encryption. Link traffic will always be encrypted by default. So we use TLS, MTLS for the signaling. We're using secure real-time protocol for the media. So there's no need to encrypt it again. The VPN will encrypt it again, adding latency, adding jitter. So from a user perspective point of view, it's most probably not the user experience that you want to have. Public internet connectivity. So I mentioned that already. Skype allows one-to-one audio. Video is planned for the future. This is actually new in 2013. However, you can do that also with your Link 2010 servers. So Link 2010 can do integration into Skype. It can do one-to-one audio and presence. AOL, you can do just one-to-one IM and presence. However, I mentioned here, the certificate on your Access Edge server needs to have the client EKU included. Otherwise, the AOL environment will not accept your connections. You will not be able to communicate with them. That's actually the only part where a certificate ever requires the client EKU. All the other certificates, all the other scenarios are okay with just the server EKU. So if you think you might ever plan in the future to do connectivity with AOL, then get sure to include that into your certificate request. Yahoo. Yahoo is a special case. Unfortunately, the contracts with Yahoo are running out. Microsoft was not able to extend this contract, so as of September 1st, 2012, you're not able to purchase PIC with Yahoo anymore. If you have it already today, it will continue to work until June 1st, 2014. There's a URL as a source. Microsoft is still trying to find a solution, so If this changes, well, there will be definitely on this blog some updates telling you about what's going to happen next. XMPP, I already mentioned that. You can do federation with XMPP. You just need to enable the functionality in your environment. You need to open a few additional ports on your perimeter network, and then you can just add these contacts. Microsoft has validated the functionality with Google Talk, so we know that works, you can do that. In theory, you can work with any XMPP provider. We just didn't test it. So if they are implemented according to the RFC, it will work. If not, then there might be a problem. So if you want to do XMPP with any other vendor, then you should test it first in your environment if it works or not. Okay, let's take a quick look at the components that we have on the Edge server. So the Edge server is running three important services for us. I mentioned them, some of them already earlier. There is the Access Edge server. It is responsible for all the SIP traffic, does the signaling, the presence, the IAM. We do have the web conferencing server doing PSOM, persistent shared object model. That's a relict actually from Live Meeting that we bought years ago, integrated in OCS. It's used for everything about web conferencing, so the PowerPoint sharing, annotations, whiteboarding, polls, and it's still there. AV Edge server, the audio video edge server, does all the media, so audio, video, desktop sharing, file transfer. We're using the secure real-time protocol, so everything is encrypted. The reverse proxy, it's not a link server role. The reverse proxy is an additional server that you maybe have already in your environment because you are running other Microsoft services. Maybe your Outlook Web Access is published over the reverse proxy. And we use it to publish HTTPS content. So it's websites to join meetings, the simple URLs, address books, meeting content, link web app, and so on. And I think we had a question. Okay, there's less a question, there's more a comment that's saying Google is not supporting XMPP anymore since they merged Google Talk and Google Hangout. I will follow up on that. I was not aware of that. But the Link Edge server can still talk XMPP. Okay, so now we know why we want to have it. We know what components we have. Now let's look at the flow, how a client signs in. And in order to make this easy to understand or to show you the history, let's start how a client signs in Link 2010. So we have on the very left side our Link client. In the internet, there's a DNS server. And then we have actually two data centers. One might be in Madrid, one might be in Vienna. Both of these data centers have Edge servers, have a reverse proxy in the perimeter network, and we have a director here. Behind the director, we have the front-end servers. So this client wants now to sign in, doesn't know anything about the environment. It's just me trying to sign in, so I type my SIP URI, it's tbinder@microsoft.com. So now the client knows, okay, the SIP domain I need to sign in against is microsoft.com. Now the client will look for an SIV record called _sip.tls.microsoft.com or contoso.com or litwering.com, whatever the SIP domain might be. It goes to the DNS server. The DNS server will actually return the SIV record. It will include an A record, so the client will then ask for the A record. It will include an IP address. And it will point in your environment, no matter how many edge pools you have, it will point to exactly one edge pool. So now my client connects to this edge server. The edge server has configured a next hop. In this case, we have a proxy, and the proxy is the first internal server in our environment, and this server will then do the authentication of the user. So it will authenticate me, and the director will see, okay, since I authenticated the user, I know user is in data center 1 or data center 2, and will proxy all the traffic to the respective front-end server. So we can see here that the director gives me some benefit, because it is this one instance that will proxy all the traffic and will take all this load and forward it to the appropriate home server. I could decide to not have a director and directly send it to a front-end pool, but then this front-end pool would tell, well, would host all the users it hosts anyway, and in addition, have all this redirection traffic it needs to take care of. In Link 2013, the process has changed. And actually, to be completely correct, this is also the process that Link Mobile 2010 is using. So we created it already in Link 2010, but only for the mobile client. Again, setup looks very similar. If the Link client in the internet knows only it needs to go to Microsoft.com, so it connects to the DNS server, and now it queries for an A record. The A record is called linkdiscover.zipdomain, linkdiscover.microsoft.com. The DNS server will return the record. It will point to one of my reverse proxies. So now the client goes to the reverse proxy. The reverse proxy proxies the traffic to one of the internal servers and calls a web service there. I authenticate myself as tpinder@microsoft.com, and the web service now returns to my client. What is the Edge server that is associated to the pool I'm hosted on? So if I'm a user in data center 2, my front-end server, I would be hosted on the front-end server in data center 2, and to this front-end server, the Edge server in data center 2 would be assigned as the AV Edge server. And that's the exact pool where I will get the information from, and it will point me to the access Edge server of this pool. Or, if I'm in data center 1, it would do the same thing, but point me to the Edge server in data center 1. So it returns to me this local access Edge server, and then, depending on what front-end server I'm hosted on, I will connect to the respective Edge server, and the Edge server will send this traffic to the next hop. So as you can see here, director is still supported. I could decide to still deploy a director, and we will talk about that, I think, on the next slide. But as you can see here, all this redirection traffic is not really necessary anymore because the users are already in the correct site, are already at the correct Edge server, being sent to the correct front-end server. About the client sign-in process, I simplified that for the slide. Actually, we are looking for some more records. So whenever I sign in, my client doesn't know if I'm internal or external. So the client will look first for linkdiscover.internal.zipdomain. If I don't find that, I will go for linkdiscover.zipdomain. It's my preferred method. Points to the reverse proxy. Internally, it points to my front-end server. It will point me to my local access Edge server. And for external scenarios, we recommend to use GeoDNS, so that if you lose ever a site with your reverse proxy, that this DNS can now point me to a different reverse proxy and I can still sign in. Because if you lose this reverse proxy, well, how is the user going to learn where his sign-in server is? The Link clients are doing still the fallback. They are still implementing what we used to do in Link 2010. So if we don't find this A records, then we will look for an SAV record. First one is zipinternal.tls.tcp.zipdomain. Then we look for _zip._tls. Then we look for an A record called zipinternal.zipdomain. Then we look for A record zip.zipdomain. And then finally, zipexternal.zipdomain. Mobile clients and the Link Windows Store app, they will always rely on Link Discover. They will not do the fallback to the SAV records. So you have to always implement Link Discover internal and Link Discover. So now the question might be, well, do I still need to deploy these SAV records if I have the new A record? And my recommendation would be to actually do that, because you might have, some users might still use old clients, Link 2010, or, for example, they might be using the Link for Mac client. Link for Mac 2011 does not support the Link Discover, it will still look for the SAV records. What you could also do is you could have the Link Discover and use that, point it to your reverse proxy. But because you don't have GeoDNS, you also implement multiple SAV records so that if you lose your reverse proxy, the clients then still just go to one of your access Edge servers in your environment. Now, talking about, yes, there's a question. So the question is, in a coexistence environment where I have Link 2010 and Link 2013, I have already AutoDiscover published, and I have it pointing to my, the reverse proxy points that to the Link 2010 server. Link Discover is already there. Well, so I would say if Link Discover is there and you publish that to your Link 2013 server, I'm 100% sure that the right thing will happen. If you point it to Link 2010, my understanding is that it would still work since the mobility clients are doing the same thing and they work on Link 2010. So yes, that should work. But to be safe and also in the sense of where you want to go to, I would always point them to the Link 2013 server. Okay, well, you have the director. So we talked about director does a lot of redirecting in a Link 2010 environment if I have multiple pools. Obviously, we don't need to do that anymore. So from that perspective, I would say now you don't need a director. However, a director is also doing something else. The director provides some security because it will be the next hop for all your incoming SIP traffic. If you want to have a second layer there, if you don't want from the Edge server to go directly to internal servers, then you should have a director. For the HTTPS traffic that we publish via the reverse proxy, it's also a next hop for some of it. So you can do the simple URLs, the link discover, that can be handled by a director. However, as soon as an external user downloads an address book, downloads meeting content, or something like that, the reverse proxy will go directly to the front-end server and publish from there. Yes, there's a question.
What's the proxy server? What's product?
Okay, so let's park the question. I'll come later on to the reverse proxy specifically. If I don't answer the question, please remind me that you asked. Signaling versus media. So this is not new at all. It's just, I've seen it again in a lot of conversations with customers, internal MCS people, partners, that it's not always clear how the media traffic works and how the signaling traffic works. In this situation, I have a user externally, and I have two internal pools. One is in the US, one is in Europe. And this user being external is actually hosted on the European pool. So let's assume for some reason this user signs in against the US Edge server. What could be the reason? Well, maybe I have just SAV records. Maybe that's still a Link 2010 client or Link for Mac 2010. For some reason, I go to this server in the US. Now, all my signaling goes to the US Access Edge server, from the US Access Edge server to the US pool, because that's the next hop. The next hop authenticates me, says, hey, well, this is actually a user homed in Europe, so I'll proxy all the traffic. However, when I sign in, I will learn via the signaling from my server what AV Edge server I have to use for all my media traffic. So no matter where I sign in against, I will always use the European AV Edge server for all the audio and video. And that's important to understand. Think about environments like Microsoft, when we had only Link 2010. All my SAV records point to a server located in the US near Redmond. So all users worldwide sign in against this server, pool of servers. It sends all the signaling to a reverse proxy. The reverse proxy, to a director. The director distributes the traffic. However, I'm as a European user. When I do an audio-video call, I will still use my local AV Edge server. So I've seen customers who try to localize the sign-in process. It doesn't really matter. It is only SIP traffic. First of all, it's not a lot of traffic. It's basically just compressed text. Second, it's not, well, it's part of our real-time communication, but it's not as real-time as an audio call. If my instant message arrives a second late, no one will ever know. So it doesn't really make sense to put too much thoughts here into how to optimize that. And good news, Link 2013 optimizes it anyway. The same applies to all the meetings created by users. So if I create a meeting, it will always be the European web conferencing server, AV Edge server, that will be used for that meeting, no matter what server I use to sign in against. Federation is similar from the concept. In Federation, we did not do any such optimization yet. So Federation, it's still the case, I have one Edge server pool in my environment that is handling all the Federation traffic. So in this example, I still have two pools in Contoso. So one is in the US, one is in Europe, and I have Litware Inc., and one is in, and this one is in Europe. And I have my two users being connected. So this Contoso user is homed in Europe, and the Edge pool for, used for Federation is actually in the US. The Edge pool used for Federation in Litware Inc., well, not a lot of choice. It's here in Europe. So when my user signs in and tries to send a SIP message to this other user, well, because I sign in against the Europe Edge server, it sends it to my home pool, to the next hop. The Europe pool sees, well, actually, litwareinc.com, that's not one of our internal domains. It's a federated domain. So let's send it out the federation route. Federation route is over the US pool. It sends the federation, because in this case, we have a federation established, sends everything to the Edge pool used for federation in Litwareinc, sends it to the next hop. Next hop sends it to the home server of the user, and then it goes to the user. So from a signaling perspective, well, it travels around the world. Again, it's just signaling. It's just my presence, my AMs. It's not a lot of traffic, and it's not as latency. Latency is not as important as for real-time traffic. Whenever I want to have a call to the Europe user, I will use the AV Edge server that is assigned to me. So it doesn't matter where the signaling goes. The AV Edge server assigned to me will always be used. Okay. Next topic, reverse proxy. And it's an interesting story. So the comment, maybe let me repeat that, was, or the question, what shall we do with reverse proxy? Microsoft always said, well, had the position, you can use any reverse proxy you want. Any product is fine. However, we have a product that we know pretty well. It's called the TMG. So in our example documentation, we show you how to use the TMG and how to configure that so that you can use it as reverse proxy. Unfortunately, Microsoft made the decision to discontinue the TMG. That means, well, it's still supported. If you have a TMG today, you can continue to use that. And there is a life cycle behind that, and it's supported probably for the next couple of years. You can go to Microsoft life cycle website, and it will tell you exactly how long it will be supported. However, if you're going into a new deployment, you cannot buy the TMG anymore. It's not able to get a license. There is a workaround. We have partners who sell appliances that run the TMG, and they still sell that. So if you really, really want to have a TMG, you still can get it. But still, the question is, what else can we do? So Microsoft has this product called the User Access Gateway, UAG. Unfortunately, it does not support Link. If you use the UAG to publish Link, your mobility clients will not work. But still, you can use any product you want that meets these requirements. So we are now doing a better job. So this in actually describing the requirements, I think this was added in the documentation update around February. So you need to have a reverse proxy that supports SSL or TLS to publish internal websites with or without encryption. And yes, there is a question. So I think, I'm not sure if I heard it, but the question was, what about Windows Server 2012 R2 with the web app proxy? So yes, we just announced and provided the preview for the Windows Server 2012 R2, and it includes a feature, it's called the web app proxy. And actually, we had discussions internally, and a lot of people are looking forward to that, if this could be used as a reverse proxy, but we don't have an answer yet. So it might be that that is actually the solution to the problem. If you want to use a Microsoft product, maybe you can go forward and use that. As soon as we know, it will be published via our blogs like NextHop and will be updated in the documentation. Okay, back to the requirements. You need to be able to publish internal websites using the FQDNs, certificates with subject alternate names. It must be able to handle that one because we use it a lot. It must be able to send the original host header. If it doesn't do it, then you will have a hard time joining meetings from external. And some of the ports need to be bridged. So they go to port 443 on the reverse proxy, and the reverse proxy then needs to bridge it to 4443. And that's actually a little bit of change to Link 2010. In Link 2010, the reverse proxy actually bridged all the ports. Now in Link 2013, with the introduction of the Office Web App Server, or WEC server as we used to call it, but we don't do that anymore, it's not going to be bridged. So it's a combination of both. Microsoft is providing documentation for some, or together with partners, for some hardware load balance. For example, for F5, you can find an integration guide on the NextHop website where it tells you how to do that. So F5 actually tested that and documents it. Another option, if you want to go with Microsoft, would be to use the IIS server. There's an application called, or functionality, application, it's ARR, application request routing. And we also document how you can do that. So there are a couple of options. But we are more looking at the moment into third party, how we can enable your F5 or your other firewalls to do that. Reverse proxy publishes a couple of FQDNs. We spoke already about the bridging the port. So we bridge that for all the link ports, for everything that goes directly to link. We don't do that for the Office Web App Server. And the port 80, mapping to 88, is an optional port. You can decide to open that depending on if you want, depending how you create your link discover records. Next topic, DNS and certificates. I don't want to go into too much detail about here because it's very well documented and probably you have heard it before. To make it simple, you need to include everything in the certificate that you want to publish. So the reverse proxy, the link discover, the simple URLs, the external web farm FQDN, and the Office Web App Server. Important for the reverse proxy is don't use a private certificate on your reverse proxy. In general, you want always on the external facing services of the edge, on the edge servers and on the reverse proxy, you always want to use public certificates. Why? Because your federated contacts, your remote users, your anonymous users, all of them need to connect to your environment and they need to trust the certificate. So if you use a public certificate, they will be able to trust it and they will be able to connect. However, I've seen customers saying, well, actually, we don't do federation, we don't do all these other things. The only thing that we have are remote users. All our machines are joined to the domain anyway, so they trust the certificate. Will that still work? The problem is, even if they trust the certificate, the client will try to download the CRL, the certificate revocation list, of the certificate authentication in order to find out if the certificate is still valid. If it fails to do so, it will not provide you all features. It will block some of the features. So, for example, you will not be able to see to download any address book, and you will not be able to see the Office Web App Server shared information. So, all the meeting content you just won't see. Yes, there's a question. Question is, can you use wildcard certificates? Very limited. So for some of the features, we support it. But whenever it comes to authentication, to signing in, we want to have the name with the real domains there, and we need to have specific A records. There's a follow-up question. Yes?
For the reverse proxy, when I generate the certificate request,
so it's a question more about how can I create best the certificate? And the comment is also, if I use IIS, then I cannot use cannot create SAN certificates. Actually, I never tried it on IIS directly to do that. I usually use the MMC to request a new certificate. And there you can provide all these parameters. Alternative is you can use the link command shell to request certificates. The question is, does Link have a wizard to create certificates? Yes, we have that, but not for the reverse proxy. And I think that was the question. Edge server external interface. The important thing here, well, you need to have all the names. If you have multiple SIP domains, you need to have them there. Common misunderstanding. I've seen a lot of people including the AV Edge server name into the Edge server certificate. This certificate is actually never shown to any other user, to any other servers. The name does not need to be in the certificate. The only important thing is that the AV Edge server trusts the certificate, that the AV Edge server has the private key, and that all my AV Edge servers within an AV Edge server pool have the exact same certificate with the same private key. So you need to export it and import it again. You don't need to add the name. And that actually might save you money, because usually when you buy certificates, every additional name will cost additional money. Edge server internal interface, yeah, you can use a private certificate there and just have the internal Edge server FQDN on it. A new feature that we included in 2013 is the rolling AV certificate. And just think about a moment how the AV certificate is used. Whenever I sign in, no matter if I'm internal or external, I will connect somehow to my front-end server, and then my front-end server will tell me, this is the AV Edge server pool that you're going to use. Then I'll tell my front-end server, great, give me credentials. My front-end server goes to the AV Edge server and says, give this user credentials. AV Edge server uses the certificate to create credentials and send it over the front-end server to the user. Now the user has these credentials, being able to use the AV Edge server, and they will be valid for 8 hours. So only after 8 hours, I will ask for new credentials, or if I sign out and sign in again. But it also means that if within these 8 hours, for some reason, I change the certificate on the Edge server, this user will not be able to do any media call over the Edge server anymore until they get the new certificate. Why? Well, the Edge server has now a new certificate, and they don't remember, they don't trust tokens that were created with the old certificate. In Link 2013, we have now the ability to create a rolling certificate, so to tell the Edge server, well, use your old certificate still, but at this specific point of time, and there's a command shell for that, start using the new certificate. And for the time of 8 hours, it will actually be able to authenticate users with tokens from both certificates. So until the point of time where I enable this command or where the effective date, it will just use the old certificate. Now, effective date happens, it will start issuing tokens with the new certificate, but the old tokens are still valid, so all my users can still use the Edge service. And this will prevent you from having downtime if you ever need to change your AV Edge server certificate because it might have been expired. DNS requirements, I think what's new here really is that for Link Discover and for the simple URLs, we now recommend to use GeoDNS to provide disaster recovery. If you don't do that, if you just point them to one reverse proxy in your whole environment and you lose this reverse proxy, well, then users can't sign in anymore. They might if you have the SRV record fallback and if they are not mobile clients, but sign-in might be affected. For sure, they will not be able to join any meetings anymore, because for joining a meeting, I need to go to the simple URL. If I can't find it, then I'm in trouble. For the SRV records, yes, they are still there. It is important that for an SRV record, that the SIP domain is in the SRV record, always points to an A record in the same domain. So I need to have _SIP._TLS.microsoft.com pointing to whatever.microsoft.com. Only then my client will accept this server as trusted, and only then my client will sign in. That also means if I have a lot of SIP domains, I will end up with a lot of SRV records and a lot of A records, and all of these A records need to be in my certificate. So if you decide, well, I have 250 SMTP domains, and I want my users to have the same SIP address as email address, then you might have a problem. It's much better, much easier, if you simplify that down to about 10, maybe.
Why do you say that you have to have the A record on the same domain as the SIP TLS SRV record? Because it works fine if you
use another A record. So the question is why I'm saying that the SRV record needs to point to an A record in the same domain, and someone is saying it works fine. It should not work fine. It should not be trusted. If it works fine in your environment, let's take a look later why. But the principle of the trust model that we want to apply is really, I need to get sure that I sign in against the right server. The certificate can help me, but it needs to be the same domain. And let me make an example. So I have the domain Microsoft.com. So I'm looking for _zip.tls.microsoft.com. Go to the DNS. It tells me, ask for the SIV record. It points me to an A record. Now, this needs to be, for example, zip.microsoft.com. Now my client knows, okay, my domain is Microsoft.com. SIV record has the same. The A record is the same. And in the certificate, we have the same again. So we can trust it and sign in. If that wouldn't be the case, for example, you're a tech ad, and someone is a little bit bored, sets up his wireless router, sets up his own DNS server. And in this DNS server, he sets up an SIV record _zip.underscore_tls.microsoft.com and points it to zip.myevilserver.com. He could get a certificate for the server if he owns the domain myevilserver.com. So my client, if we would not apply this trust model, my client then would sign in or try to sign in against the server that we shouldn't try to sign in against. Okay, so again, zip domain must be in the SIV record, must be in the A record. For XMPP, we have this new SIV record so that XMPP partners can find us and can communicate with us. Yes? So the question is, I'm in a Link 2013 environment, have two data centers, can I just use Link Discover for my...
Yeah, no, that's not the question.
Use. Okay.
If I do use that,
okay.
I have no SLV records, can I use just multiple DNS round robin?
So the question is, can I use DNS round robin for Link Discover instead of using GeoDNS, for example? The question is, what is the behavior of the client? So you, do you want just to balance the load, or do you want to provide disaster recovery?
Well, if my reverse proxy went down, whatever.
Okay, your reverse proxy went down. So I go to DNS. DNS round robin says, you go to server A. Server A is down. What's my client going to do? Well, I have an IP address now. I try to go to server A. It's not there. I stop. Yeah. So no, I don't think that is going to work. You would really need a DNS that is aware if the server is there, and then tell the client to go there. Okay, now we go a little bit into the networking domain, how you set up the link server. And for the edge server, there are two supported scenarios, how you can configure the external interfaces. You can use either one single external IP address per edge server and use different ports, or, that's what we recommend, you use one IP address for the access edge, one for the web conferencing edge, and one for the access edge. Again, both is completely supported, and you can do both. And I'm going to tell you now why you don't want to go for the one IP option. If you use only one external IP address, obviously, you cannot use the same ports for all the different services to listen on, because you need to have, per IP address, per port, only one service can listen. So what you need to do is, for SIP, you're going to assign 5061. For PSOM, you're going to assign 444, because it sounds interesting. For SRTP, for the AV edge, you're going to use 443. Now, if my client is in the public internet and can just connect to my server on whatever port I want to, everything will just work perfect. However, it is very likely that sometimes users might be in a situation where they are sitting behind a firewall. For example, I'm consultant architect, I go to my customer on-site, they allow me to use their internet, I connect to their internet, but most probably they will have firewalls that prevent me to go to any different ports than port 80 or port 443 on the public internet. So if I try to go now to my access edge server on 5061, will not happen. Same might be in internet cafes, all kinds of public places. Also, if I want to invite a user from another company, an anonymous user, to join my meeting, it's very likely that this user in his company is also not able to connect to any random ports on the internet, but they will only be able to connect to port 443. So again, both fully supported, but your user experience will be much better if you go for the option where you have three IP addresses on your Edge server external interface. And this is just a summary of what we just talked about. Subnets, not a lot to talk about here. It's just a requirement. It's what Microsoft sees as the best way to deploy Edge server, as it is tested, recommended, and supported. And we want you to have one external subnet for the Edge server, one internal subnet. These subnets must not be routed to each other so that all the traffic goes through the external interface, from the external interface to the Edge server, and from the Edge server to the internal interface. And it's not possible just physically to go around the Edge server. In terms of firewall, I really don't want to go here into all the detail. It's also quite good documented. I just want to highlight the new ports that come with Link 2013. The first one is HTTPS 443 from the reverse proxy to the internal network. This port is used for all the Office web app traffic. Be aware that in the documentation right now, this error is not included. We're working with the documentation team to get it included, but if you look at the documentation today, you won't see this error. If you don't open the port, then you will not have any meeting content, any PowerPoint sharing in your Link meetings. For the Edge server itself, we added XMPP. So on the external interface, you need to have 5.2.6.9 TCP opened inbound to the Edge server from the internet and outbound from the Edge server to the internet. On the internal network, for the same feature, you need to have the port 23456 coming from the internal network to the internal Edge server interface. We have also included a new feature. It's called the central logging service. It enables you to run on one server logging, and it will get logs from all the other servers, compose them so that you have all the information that you need. Makes logging much easier based on scenarios. However, for the central logging service to connect to the Edge server, you need to open the port 50,001, 50,002, and 50,003 from the internal network to the Edge server. $50K requirement. We have seen really a lot of confusion around that. So the Edge server has for media this requirement for the 50,000 port range. OCS 2007, you have to open 50,000 to 59,999 UDP and TCP inbound and outbound for all the media to work. This changed. Yes, there's a question. The question is, or the comment is, I can minimize the port, this range. Yes, you can configure it. The other question is, what is the benefit? If you think it's unsecure, well, it's not getting more secure by having only half of it. You could even argue that it gets less secure because these ports are randomly chosen. Whenever I create a call, it will randomly choose one of these ports. And if someone wants to attack, it will be much harder to guess the right port if it's 10,000 as opposed to 100. If you want to discuss security about these ports, we can have a side conversation later. I'm happy to do that. So, okay, so OCS 2007 requires in and outbound everything. OCS 2007 R2, we changed that. It's still the same. No change in Link 2010, no change in Link 2013. And we use this wording, requires 50,000 to 59,999 TCP outbound. And this outbound caused a lot of confusion. What we're trying to say is, the following. This is about the outbound, is about the source port when your Edge server initiates a connection. If you have a firewall that needs to configure only the target port, as usually most of the firewalls are to configure, we just say the server is allowed to connect to 443, then you don't need to care at all about the 50K port range. All you're going to do is the AV Edge server, that's in the first line, AV Edge server interface, destination IP. Any IP address in the internet should be allowed to do TCP 443, that's the destination port, the same for UDP on 3478, and incoming we accept from any to the AV Edge server TCP 443, UDP 3478. Only if you have a firewall that requires you to configure the source port as well, then this becomes important. So in this case, you need now to say the source port, and this is now the first line, my AV Edge server connecting to the internet to any IP address, the source port will be in the 50K port range. Destination port is 443. And that's basically all that we try to say with requires 50K outbound. Yes? It is the, yes. So the question is it really just a source port? Yes, it's just a source port. If you want to know why, I invite you to a side conversation because that would be a longer discussion. Yes. So someone in the audience is just confirming that there is a lot of misconception about that. I will point also later on the TechEd session that I did last year at TechEd. There's a recording where we go into detail about that. So you might also want to check that out. Okay, IPv6 support. Important, get the February 2013 update, because if you don't, it doesn't work. There are some bugs in it. We fixed that. And the Edge server basically can bridge between IPv4 and IPv6. Means you have externally a client that talks IPv4. You have internally one that talks IPv6. They can still both connect to the Edge server and have and the Edge server will translate between the versions of IP. The combination of what we support is listed in this table, so you can have an internal Edge server on IPv4. Obviously, that's interesting. That should say the front and poor. No, it's about the internal and the external. It's about the internal and the external interface. So you can have the internal interface on IPv4 or dual stack external on IP6, and here are the different combinations of what's going to work and what's not going to work. This table is actually from the documentation, so you can look there. And the only thing that we don't support is using IPv6 only. We support that only in a lab scenario because we believe that IPv6 is not ready enough to really have good connectivity to other parties. Load balancing. So it's important to do load balancing if you have multiple Edge servers, and we have the concept of DNS load balancing. DNS load balancing, sometimes confused with round robin, that's not what we're doing. Well, we're doing this additionally, but what we're really doing is we create for the same FQDN, let's say I have three access Edge servers, for the same FQDN, I just create three A records, all with the same FQDN, but with different IP addresses. The client, when it tries to connect to this FQDN, will get back all the IP addresses and has logic built in to understand, well, I need to connect to the first one. If the first one doesn't work, I need to connect to the second one. Then I will connect to the third one. This was introduced in Link 2010. We still use it in Link 2013. The thing is, it's logic that is built in the client or the servers. So only the newer components understand that. So if you have any legacy clients connecting to your environment, the mock client 2007 R2, if you have federation with OCS 2007, 2007 R2, this is not going to work because they are not aware of it. They will also get back multiple IP addresses. They will try to connect to the first one, but if this specific server is offline at that point of time, they will stop trying to connect and you will lose high availability. As long as all your servers are up and running, doesn't matter. As soon as you lose one server, might not be able to sign in anymore. MSN, AOL, they don't support PSTN, DNS load balancing. Also interesting, Exchange 2007 doesn't support DNS load balancing at all. Exchange 2010 supports DNS load balancing for the signaling part. So if you have a front-end server using DNS load balancing there, your Exchange UM can talk to it without any problem. However, as soon as an external user needs to call Exchange UM, Exchange UM, trying to do DNS load balancing, will connect to one of the Edge servers for audio-video. If this Edge server is down at that point of time, Exchange UM will stop and will not continue to try to communicate there. So only if you have Exchange 2013, DNS load balancing is fully supported. Hardware load balancing. If you're doing hardware load balancing, good news is all scenarios will work. There's nothing that is not working. You need to have additional IP addresses for this virtual IP address that points to the hardware load balancer, and all your external IP addresses on the servers directly and on the hardware load balancer must be public routable. You cannot do any netting. With DNS load balancing, you can actually do a one-to-one net of your external IP addresses. Important, the hardware load balancer must not be configured for source netting, so the edge server must always be able to see the incoming IP address of the link client, of the external party. If you don't do that, then the media path might be less optimal. And all scenarios will work. That's just a quick overview. Left side DNS load balancing, right side hardware load balancing. IP addresses with hardware load balancing, you will require more IP addresses because you have this VIP. In hardware load balancing, all scenarios will work. In DNS load balancing, all this down-level federation, legacy clients, AOL, Exchange UM, will not provide high availability or will not get high availability. Netted IP addresses, yes, with DNS, no, with hardware load balancing. And then there's the functionality of server draining, where I tell my server, you are now in draining mode, don't accept any new connections. You can do this only with DNS load balancing. The problem with hardware load balancing is that the hardware load balancer wouldn't be aware that the server is now in draining mode and would see if the services are still alive, would look for that, and then would still send connections to the server. Clients would go there, and then it would fail. You might be able to do some combination where you at the same time do some configuration on the hardware load balancer, but that's not really documented, so sounds like you need to test a little bit to get that right. Configuration, DNS load balancing is really, really simple. Just create A records, multiple of them. Hardware load balancer, well, you better get an expert on hardware load balancing to configure that piece. High availability and disaster recovery. When we, in our Microsoft mind, speak about high availability, what we're trying to say is you have in one data center, one instance of link. So there's one pool. And high availability means that it could happen that one of the components breaks, the other components should take over. And we can achieve that in just deploying in a pool, so multiple edge servers, the reverse proxies, we deploy them in an array. Just think about N plus one model. So I do my sizing, I decide I need to have three edge servers, so I deploy four edge servers, so if I lose one, the other three will take over. This will avoid any single point of failure, and that was actually the same in Link 2010. Now, in Link 2013, we introduced the concept of disaster recovery, and when we talk about disaster recovery, what we mean is you have actually two data centers. Both data centers have Link installed. You lose one of the data centers, but you can recover, and the other data center can provide you full functionality. There was a session, I think, on Tuesday on high availability and disaster recovery. You will learn much more in detail about the internal processes. This is really just about the edge server and how the edge server gets benefits from this new model. Each of your edge servers is assigned to a specific front-end pool. So each of your edge pools is assigned to a specific front-end pool. If this front-end pool fails for whatever reason, the users will fail over to a paired pool. Well, if you have the paired configuration, will fail over to this paired pool. And this paired pool has the other edge server assigned, and they will get this new edge server assigned. So by failing over from one pool to another, we also inherit the edge server that is assigned to that specific site. That means we will always be able, even if we lost our pool, we will still be able to use the edge server. It will be just the other edge server in that case. So important for that is, well, both of your pools need to have edge servers so that if you lost one pool, that on the other side you still have an edge server. We mentioned several times already GeoDNS for link discover and simple URLs is recommended. So what does it look like? So I've here my link pool in Vienna, I have one in Madrid, I have this user externally, I have edge servers, and these two pools are paired to each other. This user is homed in Vienna, I sign in against my server, I'm happy, everything is good, everything works, fantastic. Now, for some reason, the site in Vienna fails, I'm disconnected. Now I'm going through the whole connection process again, link discover, and so on. the administrator actually initializes the failover. So now when I connect to the access edge in Madrid, it will just send the traffic to the next hop. I'm signed in with full functionality. Might be a little bit different if you don't lose the whole site, if you lose only the Viennese pool, but the edge server is still there, then you need to actually do some different configuration, or the other way around, if you just lose the edge server, you need to go to Topology Builder and make changes there. But if you lose the full site, the failover will work. So the question is about, do I need to GeoDNS here? Yes, because I still need to find the server where I need to sign in against. But the point is also that whenever this user now tries to do an audio-video call, will be possible because I'm now assigned to the Madrid audio-video edge server. Federation, you still need to have manual steps there. So federation, we have always this two configurations. One is, how does the internal traffic go to the outside? So there's this federation route that I need to configure. I can do this in Topology Builder, or I can do it with the PowerShell command. And there's the SAV record pointing to my environment that tells my federated partner to talk to my edge server. So if my federation edge server pool fails, I need to make these two changes, SAV record changed and internal federation route. Be aware that depending on the time to live of your DNS record, it might take some time until others pick up this change. So you want to have on the federation route a very low time to live for the SAV record. Sizing and placement. So sizing, there's actually not a lot that we provide in detail for sizing the servers. Microsoft always uses a standard user model where we say, well, we assume that every user in your company has so many contacts, so many federated contacts, so many PIC contacts, does so many instant messages per day, so many audio calls, internal, external, so many users are actually external, and so on. Based on this user model, users create a specific load, and based on this user model, we are saying you can support up to 12,000 external users per edge server. Now, it's possible that your users are having a complete different user model, that they are doing video calls, audio calls, desktop sharing all the day over the edge server. Then this might be different for you. So it's very important with any component of Link, every time you size it, yes, look at the official guidance, use this guidance to build your environment, but you need to do good monitoring. You need to figure out, is this really what's happening? Or is my CPU always on 80% and I need to add additional servers or maybe additional pools? In terms of servers per pools, in Link 2012, you can have up to 12 edge servers per edge pool. Placement considerations. Do I want to have centralized edge servers, or do I have edge servers everywhere where I have a Link pool as well? Usually, it makes sense to really have everywhere where you have a Link pool to also have an edge server so that users who want to connect from external to the environment, that they can go a direct path. It wouldn't make really a lot of sense to me if you have, for example, in Madrid a Link pool and an edge server, and then you have in Hong Kong a Link pool, and every time a user in Hong Kong from the internal network wants to call a user in Hong Kong in the external network, all the traffic needs to travel to Madrid first and go back again. User experience might not be optimal. Also consider that you want, if you have paired pools, that you want both pools to have their edge servers so that the disaster recovery will work fine. Centralized reverse proxy. Yeah, you can also do that. Might make a little bit more sense there because it's just HTTP traffic. It's not as important how quick this traffic is. Might take a little bit longer, but still fine. Question is really, what's your disaster recovery? If you have just one centralized location, what is if you lose this location? Might be better to have a second one. And if you want to keep traffic local, you should have local reverse proxies. So technical possible, yes, centralization if you want to, but most of the time it does not make sense. Okay, after you went through all these exercises and know what you need to do, you install Edge Server, how do you know if it's working properly? Well, most Most probably, you're just signing in with the user and testing, and you see that it's working. But what I always recommend, actually, no matter what product you install, go to the Event Viewer and look for errors and warnings. Event Viewer will tell you a lot if something went wrong. What you also need to do is validate the replication to the Edge server. When you install the Edge server, we actually take a copy of the CMS, of the Central Management Store, put it into a file, a zip file, go to the Edge server, copy it there, install the Edge server so that the Edge server knows about the environment, what it's supposed to do, how it's configured. If you do that and you forget to open the port that is used for replication, port 4443, from the front end to the Edge server, if you forget to open these ports, the Edge server will never learn about any changed configuration. So let's say after some time you want to add federation or you want to add a new federation partner, since replication to the Edge server doesn't work, Edge server doesn't know about this configuration change. If you do the get CS management store replication status commandlet, then you will get information if replication is working. You always should do that. We have also two tools, the remote connectivity analyzer. It's a website. You provide the credentials of a link user. It tries to sign in on behalf of the link user. It will try to do a lot of tests, like if audio video is working and so on, and will give you a report. This the website is hosted by Microsoft, but obviously every time you enter user data into a public website, get sure to change the password later on. There's also a link connectivity analyzer. It's a tool that you can download, and you can go through the whole connectivity process. So if you have any connectivity problems, I recommend to look at the tool and use it in order to validate that clients can sign in. So what did we talk about? We talked about the Edge server architecture, what it is, why do we need it, what do you need to consider, what are common misunderstandings, what are the best practices. And now you should really have a good understanding what's required to do a good Edge server design and how to deploy the best possible design. And, well, actually, Edge is just awesome, and that's my takeaway. Resources. So we have the TechNet documentation, and this is actually the presentation I was referring to. Last TechEd, I delivered that. I delivered that several times also on internal Microsoft trainings like TechReady, also at the Link Certified Masters training, just aka.ms/avedge, and it will take you to channel 9, and you will find there the Link Deep Dive Edge Media Connectivity with ICE, where I explain how the AV Edge server is used so that an internal user and an external user can talk to each other. Next top article on the rolling AV certificate, and if you need to contact me, my contact credentials are there, tbinder@microsoft.com. Some related content, and actually with that, I want to remind you that there are evaluations. Please do them, please fill them out, please give feedback, and well, thank you very much for attending the session. Are there any questions? Yes. What about the mobile client? In what perspective? The mobile client is relying on the Edge server for all audio, video, and in the future, if we have desktop sharing, it will use the AV Edge server. All the signaling goes to the reverse proxy. Okay, I will be still here. If you have any questions, please feel free to just approach me. Thank you.